Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Music lovers, take note. You can head to Aberdeen for music from the Revolutionary War through the present this Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Our next guests present a lecture recital called I Hear America Singing, Songs from Throughout American History. We're joined now by Marla Fogderud. She is a soprano and is putting on the performance. Marla, Dr. Fogderud, welcome.
Thank you.
And we'll be joined by Dr. William Wieland here in just a moment. But let's start with you, Dr. Fogderud, and tell me a little bit about how this recital lecture came to be. What's its genesis?
Yes, a little over a year ago, I was asked to teach a course here at Northern State called Survey of American Music. And since American music is by no means my specialty, I actually enjoyed learning right along with the students and was trying to stay one chapter ahead of them in the textbook as I went along. And because we're such a young country, it makes sense that it took a while for larger forms like symphonies and operas to take hold here with American audiences. And what I realized is that what's always been present is the art song form, which means a song specifically composed by someone at a specific time, as opposed to folk songs, which are often handed down orally and are sometimes never written down. And so this program seeks to kind of give a sampling from the very earliest days of the American colonies, and it starts with the fellow who is regarded as the first American published composer and comes all the way up to the 21st century with, well, actually there are several living composers included in the program.
So this is a focus on the art song and not the folk song?
Correct.
All right. So take me back to the very beginning and tell me who one of the first composers in American history was.
Well, the man regarded as the first published composer is Francis Hopkinson, and he was a writer of popular songs and political satire in Philadelphia during the colonial times, and in fact became one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence.
We're going to invite William Wieland in to the program now, a pianist, and he's also with us in the program. Dr. Wieland, welcome to In the Moment.
Thanks.
So we're going back to sort of the beginning, and Dr. Fogderud, let's keep on that train of thinking there, and tell me how unusual would he have had another occupation? Was he a composer on the side? What did being a composer look like in colonial America?
Yeah, I believe that it was more of a side thing for most people who were writing music at that time. I've seen him described as a dilettante, as a matter of fact. There was not exactly a thriving music community at this point. It was mostly, songs performed by people on the streets and a little bit of published sheet music and that type of thing. But we had yet to really establish any major concert halls or anything like that. And so it was more of a popular form in its day, and composers would often write for fun or some sort of artistic outlet in addition to, you know, being, in his case, a writer or some such thing.
Was it considered lowbrow? Was it considered, was the music of Europe not coming over at that time? Was it considered sort of anti-England?
I believe there was a certain amount of that in some of the ballads that were written at the time. However, Hopkinson's music, it reflects a lot of the style that was popular in England. And, of course, there was still a lot of influence going back and forth at that time. And so the songs that I'm presenting of his, you wouldn't necessarily be able to tell them apart from some of what was being written in, say, London at the time. It wasn't that he magically brought forth something that was new and, suddenly right. American in its sound.
Right. Okay. Dr. Wieland, tell me a little bit how you made choices, because you've got a lot of history to work with here.
Right. Well, I'll admit that Marla made most of the choices, because she has to find music that fits her voice. With a piano player, we can usually tackle what they hand us.
Right. So, Dr. Fogderud, tell me some of those choices and what you were looking for.
Well, because this program was put together kind of as an outcropping of this class that I taught, it was fun for me to just sort of pick out the songs I liked best. I didn't have to sing anything I didn't want to on this program. And as many of the songs are, you know, they were published as sheet music in their time. They're not written for extreme voice ranges or anything like that. They are things that the average person could certainly sing in most cases. There are a couple that require a bit more of a trained voice, but such as Stephen Foster was writing music for people to be singing in their own living rooms. You know, as we got into the mid-19th century, it was much more common for middle-class people to own a piano. And so a lot of music was published with that idea that people would want to entertain themselves in their homes. And so the music is sometimes not extremely sophisticated, but it is something that allows then the performer to develop, you know, their style and apply those ideas to a simpler piece in many cases.
And when does it become distinctly American music? Can you sort of see the evolution of it as you studied when things take on a flavor that's different and we do see something that's new that maybe we haven't seen before?
Well, I would say that already with Stephen Collins Foster, we see something that's representative of the expansion west. A lot of people don't realize that he wrote O Susanna, for instance. He wrote My Old Kentucky Home, which is now the state song of Kentucky. And there's also a modified version of his song Old Folks at Home, which is sort of an unofficial state song of Florida. And so there we were dealing with a little bit more American themes and American places and ideas already. You know, still there was still some influence from what we would have seen coming out of Europe, but I think it was becoming more and more American and focused on American ideals all the time.
Let's talk a little bit about the William, your side of this recital and the sort of the piano music that's coming forth. As you look at the lineup, what were you sort of learning about the history of American music as you prepared for the lecture recital?
Anytime I work with someone, I learn a lot about music because some of these names, maybe they're mentioned in a music history book that I had studied as a student or something, but very rarely have I performed Ol Hopkinson, for instance.
Right.
In fact, I'm pretty sure this is the first time. Now, Stephen Foster, well, there's someone that, of course, I knew long before we put the program together, and Aaron Copland and folks like that. But I'd say at least half of the names were, if they weren't new to me, at least I hadn't performed much of their music or very little of their music.
What's the full range of style here? Because I am thinking it sounds fun, and give me an idea of what, you know, what all does this encompass?
Well, as she mentioned, there are these, especially the early pieces, or Stephen Foster pieces, sound like folk songs. In fact, many people would identify them as folk songs. Whereas some of the music is very romantic, like Amy Beach, for instance, is considered a romantic composer. Some is more along a popular vein, like Irving Berlin, God Bless America, patriotic song. So there's quite a variety, really.
Marla, how did you make some of those choices? You said you picked things that you liked, and I'm just wondering, maybe you can tell me a story about something else that you picked that had kind of an interesting backstory to it.
Sure. As Dr. Wheatland said, many of these composers are not well known, and that sort of went into my plan for choosing some of these things because I think there are a lot of little gems written by composers who were, you know, either not terribly famous, or even into the 20th century, doing composition as sort of a side hobby. Thomas Vincent Cater is one of them. I don't know that he's well known amongst even my fellow singers, but yet I found a wonderful piece which shows a little jazz influence of the 20s in its style. And there's one piece in particular that it goes a long way back for me. As I sang it on my senior recital as an undergrad, it was introduced to me by my undergrad voice teacher. And the composer's name is Edouard Lepay, and he was known perhaps more as a voice teacher to some of the famous voices of the time, like Nelson Eddy and Victor Marchese. But it's a beautiful setting of a very famous Elizabeth Barrett Browning poem, How Do I Love Thee? And just as gushy romantic as you can get.
So how do you prepare, vocally for this and get ready for just the wide variety of what you're going to sing? How do you have to sort of get yourself in that space?
Well, this particular program, because it includes so many songs that were written as sort of popular music, it's not terribly vocally taxing for me, and I can focus on doing a little bit more with the text. And my goal as a singer is always to get the text across to the audience. I think there's some really beautiful examples of poetry here, and I'm hoping that at the end of it all, the audience will really appreciate how these composers dealt with setting the text and really telling the story through the music.
What did your students really come out of with surprises from Survey of American Music?
Well, because the class was primarily made up of band teachers, I felt I was tossing in my 2 cents from the vocal realm of things all the way along.
Right.
And so I hope that I was able to, keep a little bit of balance in that, in having the vocalist perspective as they were learning about some of these vocal forms as they went along.
All right. It's called I Hear America Singing, Songs from Throughout American History. My guests, Dr. Marla Fogderud and Dr. William Wieland. And final details, who wants to give us a location at Northern State there so people know where to go?
I can do that. It's going to be held in Krikac Auditorium on the NSU campus, which is 1200 South J Street, if you're not familiar, and it will be Thursday at 7:30. And this is a kind of a compact program, so it's just an hour long.
All right. Thank you both so much for being here. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thanks.